What are we to make of a Messiah who compares a desperate woman to a dog? Who did Jesus come to heal and teach? What impact did the Canaanite woman have on Jesus? Today's passage is a bit of a head scratcher. It doesn't make Jesus look so great. And yet, I've come to think of it as a powerful example of Jesus's humanity. So let's dig in. The story of Jesus's encounter with the Canaanite woman is found about halfway through the Gospel of Matthew. Jesus is well into his ministry. He's gathered disciples. He's been teaching in synagogues and healing the sick. He's gotten into a little bit of trouble with the Pharisees. And through all of this, Matthew's gospel emphasizes the ways that Jesus came to fulfill the teachings of the Old Testament scripture. After getting into a disagreement with the Pharisees about purity laws, Jesus heads to this region called Tyre and Sidon. Tyre and Sidon are outside of the traditional boundaries of Israel, so Jesus is headed into Gentile territory. With Jesus leaving one place and heading to another, we see that this encounter takes place on a sort of boundary. As one scholar has observed, the margins in biblical imagination are rarely neutral spaces. They're both zones of exclusion and of potential transformation. And indeed, Jesus is about to have a transformative encounter. A woman approaches Jesus as he enters this region. The gospel writer does not name her, but we do learn a few important things about her. First, she's a Canaanite. This term signals that she came from a group of people who were the historic ethnic enemies of Israel. She's not exactly Jesus' target audience. We also learn that she's distressed. Her daughter is suffering terribly, possessed by demons. I won't pretend to understand the biblical phenomenon of demonic possession with any degree of precision, but I imagine that those of us who've faced ailments we can't see or understand know something of her suffering. And if you've ever come up against your own limits when caring for a loved one, perhaps you know a taste of the powerlessness that her mother was feeling. And so this Canaanite woman puts herself out there boldly, advocating for her daughter. She cries out, "Lord, Son of David, have mercy on me. My daughter is demon-possessed and suffering terribly." And what does Jesus do? Nothing. Scripture tells us Jesus did not answer a word. And so the Canaanite woman keeps crying out, so much so that the disciples seem to get annoyed. They urge Jesus to send her away. Prompted by the disciples, Jesus acknowledges the woman, but instead of helping her, he turns her away, saying, "I was sent only to the lost sheep of Israel." Writing about this passage, Mennonite pastor Joanna Herriter asks, why is Jesus so dismissive, so cruel? Because he's tired? Because he's sad? Because he's frustrated and overwhelmed and he just wants her to go away so he can have a little peace? Similarly, AMBS professor Drew Strait observes that this text is troubling because up to this point in Matthew's gospel, Jesus teaches and demonstrates radical neighborly love, including love towards enemies. One would think that confronted by the Canaanite woman, Jesus would put his money where his mouth is and embrace her in her moment of need, but he doesn't. Instead, we see what Professor Strait calls disturbing ethnocentrism. Jesus digs in his heels. He replies, "It is not right to take the children's bread and toss it to the dogs." Toss it to the dogs? Jesus is telling this woman that he does not come for people like her. His ministry is for the chosen people of Israel, God's children. Compared to them, she is like a dog. He won't waste what's meant for God's children on her. And yet the woman perseveres, even in the face of this dehumanizing language. She even has a clever retort. "Yes, it is right, Lord. Even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from their master's table." And then something changes. The gospel writer doesn't let us in on what exactly is going on in Jesus' mind, but he changes how he treats this woman. Herodotus observes that the Canaanite woman's extension of Jesus' metaphor exposes it for the lie that it is. This woman is not a dog. She's a human being who's suffering deeply. And so we see that through this encounter, Jesus begins to see the Canaanite woman differently. Indeed, he commends her faith and tells her that her faith has healed her daughter. What are we to make of the way that Jesus treats this woman? Comparing someone from another ethnic group to a dog sounds a lot more like something we might hear from a contemporary politician than it sounds like Jesus. Certainly, if we open our Bibles seeking comfort in Scripture, this is the kind of passage we might be tempted to skip past. Maybe if we flip ahead a couple pages, Jesus will do something we can get behind. Some Christians interpret this passage as a test. There's no way Jesus could have meant those comments. He is just testing this woman to illustrate the strength of her faith. I'm not sure about that. Others, including Professor Strait, posit that there, in this encounter at the margins, Jesus himself experienced a kind of transformation. Somehow, in some small way, the woman's response influences Jesus. He witnesses her strength, her willingness to speak up, her assertion of her own dignity, and he changes his response to her. I think we see Jesus' humanity here on full display. We spend a lot of time thinking about Jesus' divinity, but just like each of us, Jesus was a human being, a person in one specific body, in one place at one time, with the cultural understandings of that time and that place. Like each of us, bringing our own assumptions, experiences, and understandings to each new encounter. Perhaps then this story demonstrates what it is to be fully human, to be in a particular body and time, and to experience the humanity of another person. Jesus shows us what it looks like to have our prejudices broken open and our worldview expanded. Professor Strait writes, "Here, Jesus does not offer a doctrine to be affirmed or actions to be emulated. Jesus here models the necessity of an openness to the call of the other and the conversion that this call can provoke. Jesus models the reality of failure, that we often fail to think beyond the limited categories of our culture, but also the possibility of redemption." And indeed, this transformation appears to shape Jesus' sense of his own mission going forward. Joshua Hook observes that after Matthew's Jesus encountered the Canaanite woman, from that time forward, Jesus never again talks about his mission as being to one group only, but rather to the whole world. Tribalism was replaced by a recognition of our common humanity. It's not too often in the news or in popular culture that we see public figures who change their minds. Our culture tends to view changing one's mind like admitting a weakness. And yet I think our lives are full of these up close and personal moments where an encounter with another person helps us to break out of our limited worldview and challenges us to think differently about the people around us. I had a professor when I was in school who was a powerful model of the humility and openness that it takes to change your mind in public. He was a faith leader, someone who's loved and respected as a teacher. Fairly early in his career, he had publicly opposed same-sex marriage in the church. But when his beloved daughter came out as queer, he began to see his views about marriage differently. By the time she got engaged to another woman, he stood up before his church and explained how his views had changed. He was vulnerable and open, and he invited his church to come along with him and to bless his daughter's marriage. I imagine it was not easy to be transformed in this way, much less to share publicly about it. My professor's testament to the way that relationship with his daughter had transformed his perspective stands out in my mind as a powerful example of transformation through relationship. For me, one example of this kind of transformation happened when I served in AmeriCorps. I spent a year volunteering as a program assistant and librarian of sorts for a college and prison program. In this program, university faculty would go out to a prison in rural Indiana to teach. All of the students in their classes were men incarcerated in the facility. I applied for the AmeriCorps position because I had read a lot about inequality in the prison system while I was in school. I'd read books like Just Mercy and The New Jim Crow, and I thought I was pretty well informed about what I might encounter. In reality, though, my perceptions were pretty simplistic. I mostly viewed the people I would encounter as statistics in a broken system, and I didn't really give a lot of thought to who they were as people. I didn't have one mystery moment of transformation that year, but over the course of the year, I developed a strong sense of the complexity, humanity, and hopefulness of the students I encountered. We had a policy that staff did not Google our students. We were often the only people who did not know how they ended up incarcerated. Our director felt passionately that we should learn to know them as students, and this no Google policy was her way of ensuring that their worst moments would not be the ones that defined them. Throughout that year, I talked with students about the books that they needed for classes and their research projects. I read and edited papers, observed class discussions. These relationships taught me lessons I never could have learned from a book. Our students were curious, thoughtful, and motivated. And the faculty from the University of Notre Dame who would come out and teach would frequently reflect on how these students would outperform their students on the main campus of the university. I don't mean to paint too idealistic a portrait. It was a hard year, and many of our students struggled with addiction and mental health challenges. All of them faced horrible prison conditions and learned to navigate the power dynamics and prejudices of prison life. But in the midst of that, I witnessed incredible creativity, talent, and motivation. One student carefully painted birds and other animals with lifelike precision. Another student wrote an article about the work of the poet Milton, which he successfully had published in an academic journal. There were students whose families came in person to see them graduate with associate's and bachelor's degrees. There was even an incarcerated student who was released from prison and finished his degree on the main campus of Holy Cross College, where he graduated as class valedictorian. For me, getting to know these students broke open stereotypes and brought to life a set of people I had previously lumped all together as statistics. I was left in awe of their wonder, their hope, and their capacity. These encounters continue to shape me and my sense of vocation today as I work on school-to-prison pipeline and family policing issues. Regardless of the exact nature of our preconceived notions about other people, whether they're along the lines of race or class or ability or education level, it's often tempting to dig in, take a side, and accept the view that changing your mind is a sign of weakness. But I hope each of you is starting to think about the people you've encountered who've started to break you out of your assumptions and context and help you to witness God's ever-expanding love and care. So what are we to make of a Messiah who compares a desperate woman to a dog? Who did Jesus come to heal and teach? What impact did the Canaanite woman have on Jesus? I think Baptist minister Jamie Soles puts it exactly right when she says, "By the end of this story, this woman has taught Jesus a lesson about his own identity and mission that even he himself didn't know, that his mission was broader than he realized." In our world of silos and fierce debates, may we too be open to transformation and to understanding our own mission as broader than we realized. Thank you.